Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thanks for listening to the podcast from the Early Morning Late Show. Good morning. So glad you're with me this morning. It's 4 minutes after the hour. We had a great first hour. If you didn't catch it, you might want to go back. Dr. Rosemary Stein was with us, and Carmen LaBurge, always exceptionally good. And then coming up straight ahead in this hour, we've got Adam Holt. I think he's already on our studio line. How nice of Adam to be early. Love that. And then Dr. Glenn Pickering, he's probably in his car, headed this direction as we speak. And I asked him to talk about how we become so defensive so quickly when we are in a place of conflict. What is it about self-preservation that is so important to us? So we're going to find out what he has to say about that. Can't believe Thanksgiving is coming up next week. And I just, I did see in the news that the price of the Thanksgiving dinner is going to be cheaper, cheapest it's been in 5 years. So that's a good thing. And, Rebecca, you've got plans as well. You're going to be with your home folks.
Yes.
In Iowa.
Yes, this will be really fun. I mean, it's going to be a long journey to get there from here.
It always is. It's a long drive. 4 hours, and you always go without stopping, don't you? You never even stop, ever.
And I always obey the speed limit, and I never do anything.
Do you really? Do you go the speed limit?
Mostly.
That's impressive.
Mostly. I have to be honest. There are times, but I'm not a crazy speeder. I always figure I'll get there when it's within God's will.
Yeah. Well, great wisdom on your part.
I'm scared of the cops. I just don't want that ticket.
I know. I hate when they pull you over and they ask you what are those obvious questions, you know, and I think that's one of the key components of being a good police officer is you know how to ask the obvious questions. That must be part of the police officer training. I got pulled over last winter, and the officer walked up to my car squeaking in leather, had the mirrored sunglasses on, which was intimidating because it was nighttime. And I rolled my window down a little bit, and he goes, "So, why are you going so fast?" You know, I thought, there's the obvious question. And I said, "Because I didn't see you."
Obvious answer.
That makes sense, doesn't it?
Yes, that's a good answer.
You ask me an obvious question, I might give you an obvious answer there. All right, on this day, let's see. Lyndon Baines Johnson in 1934 got married. And you know, this is the first time I've ever seen the name of his wife. And because I've always thought of her as Lady Bird Johnson.
That's not her real name?
No. Any guess what it might be? Of course, I did tell you earlier, so this isn't a fair question.
You did. Should I remember what you told me?
I don't know. Do you remember?
Claudia, right?
Her name was Claudia Taylor. And that was who Lyndon Baines Johnson married on this day in 1934. And she, obviously, everyone knows her as Lady Bird. So that's, I don't know, odd fact known by few.
And now it's known by all of us.
No, not really. I don't think people will remember. But today is Friday, November 17th. And do you know we are already only 44 days left until the end of the year? And I'm sorry, but this year flew by. We're looking at 2018 around the corner.
I know, which makes, what, 34 days left to buy all those Christmas gifts that I've been putting off?
43 days, if you're me.
43.
Yeah. I'm usually at the Holiday gas station going, God, there has to be something here I can get.
Well, there is Holiday.
Here's
in the
a
name.
Shovel. Yeah, here's a scraper. I'll get that.
For all your shopping needs.
Oh, my. All right. It's almost 8 minutes after the hour, and Adam Holtz is on our studio line waiting patiently. So thank you, Adam, for that. We'll bring him on in just a minute. Welcome back to the show. It's 9 minutes after the hour. I have on our studio line the always great, never less than sensational Adam Holtz from Plugged In. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning, Bill.
So lots of new movie releases. One in particular I'm quite excited about. Let's start with that. Wonder.
Wonder. You know, Wonder is the kind of movie that we always say we want. And we'll see if people really want it or not. It stars Julia Roberts and Owen Wilson as parents of a fifth grader named Augie. Augie was born with terrible facial deformations and has had lots of surgeries, has been homeschooled, and this is the story of what happens when Augie goes to school at fifth grade, public school, for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
As you can imagine, fifth grade is a terrible place to be different.
Yeah,
right?
No kidding.
Fifth grade's hard if you're pretty, let alone if you're not.
Yeah.
And so Augie experiences some bullying and is ostracized, but it really is a story about how his response and his family's response sort of coaching him through this mean-spiritedness of some of his classmates has a transformative experience, influence, on the kids at school. I don't get to say this very often, but this is a pretty terrific movie. not too many problems from a plugged-in perspective. So I think it's definitely one if you're looking for a family film to enjoy, you know, have your heartstrings tugged a little bit, and maybe have some real conversation afterwards about, well, what's it like for you at school? Who picks on you? If those are not conversations you're having, I think this could be a great springboard to them.
Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know if this is ever done in schools, but I've been thinking about this for like decades. Where do we ever train kids to understand what a sense of humor is, and how do we use it, and how do we build people up? And you know, a lot of the times I think that when you were a kid, you said stuff because you were trying to be funny.
Right.
You know, when a friend gets a pair of glasses and you go, "Hey, four eyes," you know, you just think you're Don Rickles.
Race face or whatever.
Yeah, right. So I don't know, when do we ever talk to kids about what humor is and what a sense of humor is? I think a lot of people go, "Well, I don't have a very good sense of humor." And they say that because they don't know how to tell a joke, when a good sense of humor, I think, you know, two-thirds of it is being able to receive something and understand it and enjoy it. But I think by nature, we really don't instruct kids. We just kind of let them go, and they do their own jokes and their own humor. And 99% of the time, they're very destructive, aren't they?
Well, I think so. And, you know, the kids are just learning what it means to be a human being. And that socialization process, I think back to middle school, it was brutal. I wouldn't do it again for all the money in the world. And it's for exactly the reasons you're talking about, that, you know, these kids are just kind of finding their way blindly. Maybe don't have anybody really guiding them about what's appropriate, what's inappropriate, and why.
Mm-hmm. And that's a discussion I could have all day long, because I think there's so much damage done because there's just such a lack of awareness. Because really, kids think they're actually trying to find their own little humor too. Because they think, you know, picking on somebody is fun. They think it brings energy to a room, when they have no idea how much it's hurting somebody.
That's right.
So this movie could be a great opportunity to get your kids together, go see the movie, and I have a feeling you wipe a tear or two at this one?
Yeah, probably a tear or two.
Okay.
And again, this is the kind of movie that we say we want. So if it does badly, you know, Hollywood pays attention.
So, I get it. So,
you know, support the good stuff, right?
Yes, so this would be a good weekend to go out and support it. And then it might be a good opportunity to have a conversation with your kids about, tell me what you think humor is. And, you know, one of my rules is, if you're making a joke about sin ever, that's wrong.
Hmm.
Sin's not funny.
Guideline to me.
Yeah, I mean, sin's not funny, and it's not funny to God, and it's a good place to start with in a Christian home. All right, let's move on to The Star.
The Star is a new animated movie, and it retells the nativity story from the perspective of a donkey. And that might sound a little unusual, but we all know animals play a big role in Jesus' birth, right?
Mm-hmm,
they're all gathered around. And so The Star tells the story of Boaz, and Boaz is a frustrated donkey. He grinds grain all day. He has a sense that he's been created for something bigger, for a purpose that has more significance than just turning corn into smaller pieces, or wheat, I should say, probably not corn in Israel. And one day this star appears in the sky, and everybody is sort of, you know, tr- trying to figure out what it means. And cutting to the chase here, literally, he escapes and he ends up with Joseph and Mary. And the movie really tells very faithfully the biblical story of Mary becoming pregnant. The angel shows up, and there's a lot of stuff really pretty much straight from Scripture. And then we have this sort of imaginative component with Boaz, and he has a friend named Dave the Dove and Ruth the Sheep, and they accompany Joseph and Mary on what becomes a pretty perilous journey from Nazareth to Bethlehem. And it's perilous because Herod has found out something's going on, and he sends this big ogre-like soldier with two mean dogs to kind of hunt them down. So obviously, that's not biblical in the most literal sense. Obviously, Herod was very concerned. But it really is a great movie, I think, about friendship, about forgiveness, about, you know, putting others' needs ahead of your own. There's a lot of interesting interplay with Dave the Dove and Boaz the Donkey about setting aside their own dreams of greatness to participate perhaps in something that they didn't understand or expect, but ends up being bigger than anything they anticipated. So a couple toilet jokes probably are the only thing to really be concerned about. And a couple scenes that for really young or sensitive viewers might be a little bit on the intense side. The dog and the hunter are kind of intense in certain moments.
Mm-hmm.
But this is another lovely movie. Again, when was the last time I came on your show and had two things that I could actually say
are
movies worth seeing?
I kind of stacked the deck that way, though. I was trying to hope that I'd go two for two with Adam Holtz in one day. So let me take a little break, Adam. I'm going to come back. Okay. A couple other movies, Justice League, Murder on the Orient Express, and time permitting, I'll ask you about Taylor Swift's new album, which I think is selling a ton. Be back in a minute with Adam Holtz. It's 17 after the hour. Thank you for listening this morning. It's 19 minutes after the hour. I am crazy about our listeners, so thank you for tuning in. We're talking to Adam Holtz. If you just joined the conversation, we're talking movies, things to do over the weekend. And Adam, we're two for two right now, so I don't know where we're going with this one, but let's talk about Justice League.
Well, Justice League might be our first swing and a miss for the morning, I'm afraid.
All right.
On a couple of levels. Justice League, of course, is the DC Extended Universe. That's what it's called, DC Comics film franchise. And it brings together not only Batman and Wonder Woman, but Cyborg and Flash and Aquaman to fight a bad guy named, wait for it, Steppenwolf.
Oh, boy.
You know, you got to wonder if there's a magic carpet in there somewhere.
There better be.
Sorry, I couldn't resist.
I couldn't either.
Still trying to get over naming a bad guy Steppenwolf. But anyway, Steppenwolf is a bad guy, and he's looking for three boxes that unlock incredible power and enable him to do incredibly bad things, as is typically what happens with bad guys in superhero movies. So it's about what you would expect in terms of both storyline and content. There's a lot of comic book style violence, although it's probably not as violent as Man of Steel or maybe even Batman versus Superman in terms of the collateral damage, especially Man of Steel. I mean, like, if you would have tallied the number of people who died in that, I'm guessing it's a big number.
Mm-hmm.
I think as a parent, the bigger issue for me personally is there's a reasonable bit of profanity.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably no more than most other films of its kind out these days, but I don't need my kids going to a superhero movie and hearing the S word a couple times.
I hear you.
You know?
Yeah.
I think that's where I get the most disappointed. And even apart from a plugged-in perspective, it's gotten really mixed reviews, just from a general mainstream audience that it feels like DC is kind of desperate. They're trying to play catch-up with Marvel, and they've thrown this thing together, and on paper, it looks like it has everything it needs, a bunch of heroes, lots of explosions, but it's just not a great movie.
Okay.
Great movie
Okay, let me go to the score here. Let's see, it's 2-1 right now. Let's move into Murder on the Orient Express.
Okay, Murder on the Orient Express, of course, is arguably Agatha Christie's perhaps most famous murder mystery, and this one has an all-star cast, like, you know, just start naming people, and there's a pretty good chance you're going to pick one of the actors that's in this movie, and it is about a murder on a train, and Kenneth Branagh plays Hercule Poirot. My 5 years of French, I hope, are allowing me to say his last name correctly, and somebody dies, Johnny Depp's character, and I have to figure out who done it. I mean, it's just a straight-up whodunit movie, and it is remarkably, for a movie in this day and age, pretty clean. There is one place where we see a body that, you know, is a little bit gruesome, but other than that, it's pretty light on language. There's a tiny bit of innuendo, but it really is a movie about right and wrong and whether we can know the truth or not. So there are some surprising spiritual elements here. I think fans of this kind of story will probably really enjoy this one. And we were, for the most part, pretty pleasantly surprised with how relatively clean it is.
Mm-hmm. And I think that the premise of the movie, I think for many of us, including myself, the idea of a train, a story on a train, is romantic or it's fantasy. You know, in reality, I would have Dramamine coming out of a Pez dispenser because I would be so sick to my stomach. But just to sit and observe it, it's just a really fun little adventure, isn't it?
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly right. And, you know, in addition to Kenneth Branagh and Johnny Depp, you've got it's just a long list of people who are involved with this movie. It's the kind of movie that Hollywood doesn't make as often as perhaps they used to, so it's a little bit of a throwback, I think, and obviously the story's been around. I don't have a published date on the original, but long time. So, again, this is the kind of movie that we, as Christians, sometimes say we want, and here's an opportunity if you're going out this weekend to maybe consider something other than Justice League, which gives us more explosions.
Right. Just a couple of minutes left, or less than that, Adam. So what about an indie flick called Last Flag Flying and Lady Bird?
Last Flag Flying stars Steve Carell and Bryan Cranston and Lawrence Fishburne as three Vietnam vets, and they kind of rally around Steve Carell's character. He's just lost his son in Iraq, and it's a story about death. It's a story about the government and its flaws. It's a story about the problem with war in general. It actually plumbs a lot of pretty deep subjects.
Mm-hmm.
I liked the movie personally, but I also will say very quickly, it's an R-rated movie for a lot of language.
Okay.
So that's problematic. So it's a... It's got some tender stuff, but a lot to weigh as well. So if you're interested in that, definitely check out our review. And Lady Bird is a, let's see if I can get this right, is a poignant coming-of-age story. Nobody's ever used that phrase before.
No.
About a young girl who is not Lyndon Baines Johnson's wife, but somebody who has taken his wife's name as her own. And she's got a really sort of volatile relationship with her mom. She's trying to figure out who she wants to be when she grows up. She makes some really bad choices. This is another R-rated movie that has some, this one's got some sexual content and some profanity. But another one that has some surprisingly spiritual moments. She's grown up in a Catholic home and at one point ends up in church and sort of is clearly, you know, not happy about the choices she's made. So another one, if you're looking for a drama, it's interesting, but again, R-rated movie.
Mm-hmm. So all that prep I did this morning on Lady Bird Johnson all went out the window. So just
all
so you know.
I'm so sorry. Although I didn't know her. What was her real name?
Claudia Taylor.
Claudia Taylor. Who knew?
Yeah, who knew? All right. Thanks, Adam. Love our conversations.
Thanks,
yep. Have a great weekend at the movies.
Yep.
It's 26 minutes after the hour. We'll take a short break, and then we'll head right to Breakpoint. Good morning. It's 31 minutes after the hour. Now 32 minutes. So I'm on top of things this morning. We're going to go to news. And then straight ahead, Dr. Glenn Pickering is in studio already, which means this. In the next 8 minutes, you need to get your notebook and a nice sharpened pencil or pen, because you'll be wanting to take notes. That's always the way it works with Dr. Glenn Pickering. His web address is glennpickering.com. Two N's. Be back in a minute.
If you're a parent trying to raise your kids in a godly home, you probably know this verse from Proverbs. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. That verse from Proverbs may strike a nerve for you, especially if your teens made some bad decisions and wandered from the faith. But it wasn't given as an indictment of parents and their effectiveness. No, it's an encouragement for parents to be intentional about spiritual things. Build godly principles and precepts into your kids' lives, and God will be faithful to care for your kids. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it.
Having trouble parenting your teen in today's rapidly changing culture? Get instant access to Mark's new free parenting course online at parentingtodaysteens.org.
Good morning, 23 minutes until the top of the hour. I'm always happy when Dr. Glenn Pickering comes in studio because the talk is so powerful. And he just reminded me today is 11-17-17. He likes that number 17 because his birthday is on the 17th. His wife Gwen's birthday is on the 17th.
That's right.
And 17 is a big number for me too, because I had just graduated from eighth grade. So
wow, nice.
Yeah, it was exciting.
The second time.
So Glenn, I wanted to have a conversation today about, and I want to invite callers to chime in as well. 877-933-2484. I want to talk about defensiveness. Why defensiveness is often our default position when it comes to hard conversations and conflict. What is it about defensiveness and self-preservation that seems to be the highest order of what we want in conflict? I don't know if I said that right, but
no, but we don't care. We don't have to have a conflict about that.
Okay, good.
I think about this a lot, so that's a fascinating question for me. And for me, it comes down to this. We get defensive because we believe the lie. And here's what I mean. So Adam and Eve are in the garden, right? And they have this perfect relationship and a perfect life and a perfect relationship to God. And everything is exactly as it should be. And the serpent comes along and convinces Eve and Adam that actually the truth of the matter is that there's something wrong with them. They're not good enough. And they believe that lie, and they ate the apple. And things happen from there. But I just want you to start off noticing all of our defensiveness starts with the believing that same lie. If I think I'm not good enough, and I really believe that, and then you point out to me that I'm not good enough, it triggers in me that sense, I got to defend myself. I got to protect myself. So you see the same thing in the original Bible story. So as soon as Adam and Eve believe that they weren't good enough, they eat the apple, and then they're ashamed, of course, because now they believe that there's something wrong with them. Mm. And that's the difference between shame and guilt. Guilt says, hey, the thing I just did wasn't correct, and I need to do that better. Yeah, that's probably true. Shame says there's something wrong with who I am. And that can't be true. Because we were all created by God exactly, and I mean exactly, as we are. That's the truth. So as soon as we believe the what I call the original lie, that we're not good enough, then we think, I have to hide that from people, just like in the Bible. So as soon as Adam and Eve believe that it's not good enough, what do they want to do? First, they hide themselves. They hide themselves by putting on fig leaves. And then Adam hides behind a tree, thinking God won't find him. That part of the story always makes me laugh.
Right.
let's see, if I hide behind this tree, the God who created the entire known universe with a thought won't know where I am.
Right.
that kills me.
all right, Glenn, so we know we're flawed.
No, we believe it, but we're not.
But we're not flawed?
No. Here's a really interesting thing. You are exactly as God created you to be.
So what are we protecting?
We're protecting that belief that we're not. We believe so deeply, our ego, our little human self, believes that lie so deeply that there's something wrong with us that I have to protect myself. So just like Adam and Eve, so first they try and hide themselves. And then when God does come along and say, well, so you ate the apple, what was that about? Adam, of course, throws God and Eve under the bus and says, well, the woman you gave me made me eat the apple. So first, we want to hide. If we make a mistake, we think, oh, that's not a mistake. That proves that there's something wrong with me. So we go from guilt, which is helpful, immediately to shame, because that's the original lie. See, any mistake you make just proves that you're not good enough, that you're bad. And then because we believe that lie, then we want to hide our mistakes and hope nobody notices. And so as soon as somebody attacks us or points out a mistake we make, we do just like Adam. First, we try and hide, try and blow it off, hope nobody notices. And then if somebody does say, no, really, I saw you made that mistake over there, then we want to blame it on somebody else. And I'm going to talk about how my wife did this thing wrong with the people over in that other department, never got that information to me, or who knows what.
Mm-hmm.
And so we immediately move from sort of hiding ourselves to attacking other people. And it's all based on believing that there's something wrong with me. See, to the extent that I get the original truth, which is I'm perfect exactly as God created me, then if somebody says to me, Glenn, I think you made a mistake over here, I think, oh, yeah, that's probably true. What would I defend?
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing to defend. I'm precious in God's sight.
Okay. That I can understand.
Okay.
But when you say we're not flawed, what are we then? Are we broken? Throw me a bone here somewhere.
There are so many I could throw you. I'll throw you this one. Here's the fun thing. Here's how I think about it. A toddler, a little kid who's just learning how to walk, knows two things. One, they think, as nearly as I can tell, I'm the center of the universe. Because as soon as I fall down, everybody in the room rushes to pick me up and see if I'm okay.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as I fuss a little bit, everybody in the room turns to me and sees if I'm okay. If my dad carries me into the room with him, with a room with half a dozen adults in it, none of the adults talk to my dad. They all talk to me. Oh, it's so good to see you. Yeah. So as nearly as I can tell, I'm pretty much the center of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and because they're a toddler, so they're just learning how to walk. So what do they do mostly?
Fall.
Right. So here's what every toddler knows, which is why Jesus said, unless we become like a child, we can't enter the kingdom. A child knows I'm precious exactly as I am, and I fall down a lot.
Okay.
Now, it's so important that we as Christians understand it, because we really can't be in the faith unless we get those two things. I am precious in God's sight. He adores me exactly as I am, and I fall down a lot, and I need to keep learning things. That's part of why I'm here. I need to keep learning things. I need to keep maturing in my faith. So I am exactly right as I am, and God wants me to keep growing. So he's always saying these two things to me. Glenn, I love you exactly as you are, and I insist that you change. And as humans, see, we get that mixed up in our mind. We think those are contradictory.
Mm-hmm.
But see, that's how you would think of any kid you have. You would think, I love you so much just the way you are. And I would want you to keep learning and growing and becoming a better and better version of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And so God is always looking at me and saying, Glenn, you're so precious to me. You're so perfect exactly as you are. And I want for you to keep growing.
All right. Let me put an adult expression into the mouth of this two-year-old, this toddler, who has just fallen down.
Right.
And the toddler stays on the floor and cries out, well, I'm not perfect. I think we use that all too often because we're always defending something. We're we're defensive about something because when we've made a mistake or we've disappointed somebody or not met their expectations, we play the I'm not perfect card, which is so counterproductive, isn't it, Glenn?
Yeah, it is. So what's really important, because see, here's the thing. If I do shame or blame, and I promise I'm going to answer that question. Might not seem like it for a minute. God wants us to learn stuff. I believe if you read all the fascinating stories of people who have near-death experiences, you know, who die, cross over, experience heaven, and then come back and tell us what it's like.
Mm.
They all say that we take two things with us, love and wisdom. So all the people who loved me when they were on earth still do when they're on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And all the things we learn in this life, we take with us. We don't take our body with us. We don't take any of those things with us. We take love with us, and we take wisdom, which says to me that from God's perspective, there are two things on the earth that are the most important, learning how to love other people and learning wisdom, learning the lessons we're supposed to be learning.
Yeah.
So when I say, if I blame somebody else for my problems, I'm not learning. Let's see, if I get all caught up in shame, well, see, this just proves I'm bad. I also don't learn anything.
Mm.
I just think, well, I'm just a bad person. Which is why I'd even say, well, I'm not perfect, you know. It's just a way to say, well, see, that's just how I am. And And God just wants to just whip out loud then and say, no, 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 no. This is a chance for you to learn something. We need to acknowledge our mistakes and think, oh, huh, I need to get better at that.
Mm-hmm. All right, I'm speaking to Dr. Glenn Pickering. He is an author, a counselor, a psychologist, a pastor, an engineer. And I could go on, but what's the point after like five titles? And if you have a question for Dr. Glenn Pickering, please pick up the phone, give us a call. We're inviting your questions. We'd love to get one. Are you defensive? Why do you take that default position? Why is self-preservation so important? What do you know? What question do you have? 877-933-2484. We'll be back in just a minute. Thanks for being with us this morning. 12 minutes until the top of the hour. I'm speaking to Dr. Glenn Pickering, who's in studio. We're talking, and we're inviting your questions or comments, if you like, about being defensive. Is that your default position when you get in conflict, when somebody talks to you and confronts you with maybe a truth? How do you respond? Why, Glenn, are we always, you know, if we have projected a false self about us, why do we protect that? What are we so hungry to protect, and why do we present a false self?
Thank you. It really does come back to that thing I was talking about before the break about really thinking there's something wrong with me. And so what you see, as soon as Adam and Eve thought there was something wrong with them, what they wanted to do is to hide that fact.
Mm-hmm.
See, I have nothing to hide if I don't think there's something wrong with me. If I think the truth, I'm just a God's precious child, and if I made a mistake, I made a mistake. So what? But if I really think my mistake just shows that I'm not good enough, then I hope nobody notices my mistakes, because then they'll think the same thing about me that I do, which is that I'm bad.
Mm-hmm.
So then we go around pretending that we don't make mistakes, which is just, it's so unbiblical. Because I really meant what I said before we went to break, that one of the two things we're here for love and for wisdom. And I really am supposed to be learning these powerful lessons that God is giving to me. And so if I go around pretending I don't make mistakes, well, then whatever lesson I'm supposed to learn from that mistake, I don't learn because I'm busy pretending I didn't make it.
Am I not less lovable, though, if I'm not perfect?
Here's the interesting thing. Do you love more somebody who pretends they've got it all together or somebody who's real open about their struggles?
Well, the person who pretends they have it all together are pretty annoying.
Yeah, I know. They're hard to be around. You can't connect to them. You can't find any way into their life. And mostly you just feel like I'm not talking to you. I'm just talking to this false exterior that you're putting up.
The Bible talks about we connect at our level of brokenness, don't we?
I know, for sure. Mm-hmm. It's one of the things I preach about in my seminars all the time, about how we connect on the level of our struggles. So what I think then is we go on trying to pretend to be perfect to get people to love us, except that's guaranteed to make them not. We mm-hmm. actually love people when we see their real self.
Mm-hmm.
So when Jesus said that he wants to gain his life will lose it, and he was going to lose his life will gain it, people get that mixed up, I think, like somehow I'm supposed to give up on my life or I'm not supposed to care about my life. And Jesus wasn't saying that, of course. Your real life, the life that God actually gave you, the way he actually created you in your precious self, is incredibly important. It's sacred. What Jesus was talking about is we need to die to that false self, that part of us that pretends we have it all together, that we don't have lessons to learn, that wants to judge everybody else's mistakes as if we don't make any ourselves. And I think that self we need to let go of. So if you're listening, I just want you to hear this. If you think you need other people's approval, you need to drop that lie. If you think you need to please other people, you need to drop that lie. If you think you desperately need people's attention, you need to drop that lie. Those are all just false lies, things we tell ourselves to try and make ourselves feel better instead of just understanding, no, you are perfect exactly as God created you already. And the absolute foundation of our faith starts with believing that to be true.
Mm. That's a little bit, I appreciate that, and I think it's true, but I think it's still a little bit of a tough sell because there's a lot of people that would be sitting listening saying, oh, well, Glenn, that sounds like it kind of works in theory, but I know how messed up I am.
Right, and I want you guys to hear this loud and clear. You are.
Don't sugarcoat it. Just give us to it. Give it to us straight.
That's the job security for me.
But, yeah, right.
But what I really mean by that is this. I don't get better by pretending I've got it all together. I get better by acknowledging my flaws without fear and just thinking, yeah, this is something I see in myself and I want to get better at that. Great.
Yeah.
But, but if I think that just proves that I'm bad, I don't even want to admit I have flaws, so I never work on them because I pretend I don't have them. But God says, oh, Glenn, you're precious in my sight, and if there's anything you want to get better at or need to get better at, I will point that out to you, and I'm just going to ask that you just start working on that. Period.
Yeah, but Glenn, nobody, especially as you get a little bit older, you'd never want to appear inadequate or foolish. And that's part of the problem. So
well,
the Apostle
Paul was really clear about how willing he was to be foolish for the Lord. And I think it's all true that that if I want to actually be on a godly path, really and truly, that path might look foolish to anybody who's not on the path. And that's just true. I was out to supper a little bit ago with four friends, two of them were real serious believers and two who pretty much aren't. I was talking to this one person that was kind of hurtful to me and how I was working on forgiving them. And the people who are serious about their faith were like, yep, that's smart, way to go. The people who are not were like, oh, I wouldn't do that. I'd rip them a new one. I'd be, and I think, right. See, if you're not on the path, being on the path looks foolish.
Mm-hmm.
I promise you it's true. And the further I get in the path myself, the more I see that that's true.
Yeah. All right. Let's say we're confronted with the truth by someone.
Mm-hmm.
How are we at accepting it? And are we sometimes suspicious of another person's agenda when they're talking to us?
Yes.
Something might be coming out sideways.
Yep.
So how do we listen and understand truth when I go, I think this person is just annoyed by me and is trying to needle me right now.
Right. And that may very well be true. One of the things I work hard at doing is I think, is there anything in what they just said that resonates with me? So if I drop all the defending, drop all the arguing and just think, okay, is there anything in what they just said, even some grain of truth in that? Because if there is, I just want to take the grain of truth. So if somebody said, Glenn, you come off as arrogant sometimes. I think, okay, I know I'm not arrogant. But I also think, okay, but if there's anything I'm doing that looks like that,
mm-hmm.
I would want to know that. Because I would want to work on that.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I am somehow conveying that impression, then I want to get better at that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not going to say, oh, no, that's so terrible. I'm not arrogant. I'm not going to get into that argument because I know I'm not arrogant.
Mm-hmm.
But I also know, but I always had things to learn. And so if there's any truth about what they just said, that I'm going to give it some prayerful thought. And if there's any truth in there, I'm just going to ask God to reveal that truth to me.
Mm-hmm. And it seems like in our the way in which we do social media and everything mm-hmm. else, we're awfully committed to putting our best foot forward and making every day look like the best day in the world, and I've got my things together, and life couldn't be better. And I think it also generates a sense of this false self that mm-hmm. we present to the world, which really isn't our true self.
No, it has almost nothing to do with our true self.
Mm-hmm.
My true self has struggles. My true self also has fun days and celebrations and good things too,
mm-hmm.
but there are struggles mixed in with that. And when I used to read the story that Jesus told, that parable about the wheat and the weeds, I used to think, that's the weirdest story in the Bible. But now I really get, he's just trying to say, that's what life looks like. There's wheat, there's amazing things that are happening, there's weeds mixed in with that, and struggles and things that are hard, and sometimes it's hard to even tell which ones are which.
Mm, yeah. Glenn, always so much to learn from you. I appreciate your perspective and wisdom and counsel. Unfortunately, that kind of wraps up our time, but I'm going to beg you to stick around and maybe we can have some post-show conversation. We can continue this. I'm speaking to Dr. Glenn Pickering. His website, glennpickering, PICKERING.com. That's Glenn with two N's. And you can find out more about his writing and his workshops and counseling, and you can find it all right there. We'll take a short break and wrap up the show in just a minute. Thank you so much for listening today. I hope you have enjoyed the show. Special thanks to Dr. Glenn Pickering, who has been convinced by me to stick around in the studio for continued conversations. So we'll be able to air that conversation next week. Looking forward to that. And always appreciate Adam Holtz, who gives us movie updates, tells us what to avoid and what to go see. And Dr. Rosemary Stein, always great. And Carmen LaBurge. So what a great show we've had today. But we don't have a show without listeners, and we love our faithful listeners at Faith Radio. Thank you for listening. Thank you for caring. We love you. So we're going to be giving lots of thanks and gratitude starting like right now. Have a great weekend. See you Monday.
Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.